This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
On Monday, suspected Israeli warplanes bombed the Iranian consulate in Syria's capital city of Damascus, marking a major escalation in Israel's war in the Middle East.
You know, in some ways it's unprecedented. Israel is really upping the ante. It has changed the usual rules of engagement. You see, Israel and Iran...
At least 11 people, including a senior Iranian commander, were killed in the attack. And the Iranian ambassador to Syria has vowed revenge.
We told you before, the Zionist entity knows very well that such crimes and any kind of crimes will not remain without response.
This is In the News from the Irish Times. I'm Sarah Pollock. Today, why is Israel bombing Iranian targets? And what does it mean for escalating tensions across the Middle East? Duncan Bullivant is an expert in conflict and post-conflict security, and he is CEO of a global risk advisory company. Duncan, did Monday's bombing of the Iranian consulate in Damascus, the capital of Syria, come as a surprise at all?
I think the act itself didn't come as a surprise. There's been a tit-for-tat striking of various targets between the Iranians and Israel for some time, and certainly since the 7th of October. I think the fact that it was a diplomatic mission, although the Israelis at the moment are denying this, the fact that it was a diplomatic mission has obviously raised the game. It's not something that is necessarily normal in terms of international affairs. But I think in terms of the fact that Israel is striking very high-value individuals and killing high-value individuals is no surprise. And it is definitely moving in an escalatory direction at this stage of the game.
Duncan, how exactly did the attack unfold on Monday and who were among the casualties?
Well, look, I think the thing to bear in mind is that there was an attack on, over the weekend, a drone attack on a Israeli facility, a port facility, that didn't actually cause any damage, but it was definitely carried out by Iranian proxies. Whether this was a rapid response to that, we just don't know. I mean, none of us really know what goes on within the Israeli high command. But the escalation of activity and the escalation of military activity between the north of Israel and the Hezbollah forces in Lebanon has been getting steadily worse over the last weeks and months.
An Israeli airstrike in southern Lebanon has killed at least 7 people. The attack hit the village of Habaria. It targeted a health center used by a Lebanese armed group, Hezbollah. The Israeli military and Hezbollah have exchanged cross-border fire since the war on Gaza began. In
response, it is now at an escalatory point where Israel fears it absolutely has to take action to send a warning signal to the Iranians that enough is enough and that there is a line that they're drawing in the sand. And that's one explanation for it. Another explanation for it is that Israel has got a very long list of targets, very long list of individuals who they regard as enemies of the state or who are actually part of, you know, perpetrating the war in Gaza. And on this particular occasion, they have killed the general responsible for planning Hezbollah's operations up until about 2016, and who is also responsible for coordinating the Iranian proxy movements like the Islamic Resistance in Iraq. You know, this is the guy and this is the team, the Iranian team, who have been responsible for planning, financing, providing training and equipment for terrorist groups who have been hitting Israeli targets for the last couple of years in the region, and also who are linked to those who have carried out attacks on Israel's primary ally in the region, which is the United States.
Can I ask, and I know this is a question that actually merits an entire podcast series, but if you could put in a nutshell, what are the key factors that contribute to the ongoing tensions between Israel and Iran?
The Iranian regime, not the Iranian people, the Iranian regime rejects the legitimacy of a Jewish state. That's the primary building block. The bigger picture is that Iran wishes to see the United States removed as a regional influence and for them to replace the United States as the main regional influence. And the primary block to Iranian dominance in the region is Israel. And Israel is the United States' primary ally in the region. It's a liberal democracy. The United States, as we all know, has supported Israel since its inception. That's the second issue. And the third issue for the Iranians at this point is that over the last few years, trading ties, diplomatic ties with the Abraham Accords have seen Israel come closer and closer to its Arab neighbors. And I think right at the beginning of this terrible conflict, prior to the 7th of October, we were seeing Saudi Arabia and Israel on the verge of signing normalization treaties, which would have seen normalization of diplomatic ties, trade ties, tourism, and the like. And of course, all that's on hold at the moment. So this is, in the big picture, this is about Iran wishing to squeeze the Americans out. It's about Iran who does not wish to see a successful Jewish state in the region, if there is one at all, and an Iran which sees itself as the future tipping major power in the region, a major power which will call the shots both within the Sunni and Shia communities, which is perhaps an area that has changed dramatically in the last 5 years.
The senior commander of the powerful Iranian Revolutionary Guards, Mohammad Reza Sahedi, was killed. So very significant, a high-profile member of Iran's Revolutionary Guards reportedly killed.
Duncan, what has Israel said in response to the attack? Have they taken any responsibility for what happened?
Israel hasn't commented yet. I mean, I think they've tried to suggest that this wasn't a consular building. It was a private address being used by the Iranians. I think the Israelis are unlikely to comment in any detail on what is effectively, cross-border, highly secretive and intelligence-led operations. But in due course, people are people. Information comes out. There are leaks, and we'll have more information. What I think is significant about this particular attack is that it is an escalation in terms of the audacity of the Israeli Defense Force to hit target high-value targets like this outside of its immediate sphere of influence. It sends a significant warning to Tehran that Israel still has teeth. I think it's very important to remember that Israel is in a precarious position. I think we're all looking at this through the lens of what's actually happening in Gaza on a daily basis, which is a great human tragedy, and nobody can deny that. But the Israelis have their own position, which is that the moment they show any form of weakness, the moment they show any form of compassion within this conflict, it will be taken as a signal to their enemies that Israel is somehow on the back foot, and they simply can't afford to have that enter into the psyche. By the same token, the United States, it has to be careful with the language it uses in criticizing Israel. I think it's fair to say that the Biden administration is probably at the limit of its diplomatic influence now over Israel with the forthcoming election in the United States and the sort of this rather peculiar period in U.S. politics. So at this stage of the game, the United States doesn't want to throw Israel under the bus. And by the same token, is slightly tainted by every action that Israel takes of this nature. So it is escalatory in its nature, but it is an inevitability, I think, that we're going to see more of this type of action. And I think we need to be looking to now what is going to be the response from Iran over the next weeks, months, and possibly years.
Yes, on that, Iran's ambassador to Syria, Hossein Akbari, he was not injured in the attack, and he said Tehran's response would be decisive. What forms could this decisive action possibly take, do you think?
The options for Iran are actually both limited in terms of significance. Iran, contrary to what some people may believe, Iran is not a strong state at the moment. It's got considerable internal issues in terms of, you know, human rights demonstrations. The economy is not going well. But on the other hand, they do have this incredibly elaborate network of groups around the region who are prepared to carry out terrorist attacks, you know, what most people would call terrorist attacks, but of course the Iranians wouldn't. And that's all managed by the Al-Quds organization. So in terms of Iran's options, it's most likely going to come from one of their proxies, of which there are no shortage. But I think what we need to be cognizant of is the fact that we're looking at this as something happening in Israel or something happening in perhaps in Syria. You may recall the attack on a U.S. listening post a few months ago, which caused the loss of American life. The Iranians were pretty cut up about that because they really don't want to get into a direct conflict with the Americans at this point, which is something to consider. So one also has to look at wider targets. So the Iranian network, the Iranian intelligence network within the region, and I'm looking now in particular, you know, beyond the Middle East, perhaps down in into the Indian Ocean, perhaps down even as far as East Africa. You know, they'll be looking for suitable targets, Israeli assets or Israeli-owned assets or those who are closely linked to Israel. So I would say that Iran's responses, although they're limited in terms of direct attacks on Israel, regardless of its new technology and its new drones, we should be very careful and we should be cognizant of the fact that Iran may well, through unofficial means, encourage, if not directly support, hits on softer targets on a much broader map. And I think that's one of the things that are giving certain world leaders and certain regional authorities some cause for concern. The pulse wave, the ripples from this conflict are definitely spreading further than we might imagine. On the other hand, Hezbollah is sitting up in Lebanon and is making life impossible for Israeli citizens in the north of Israel. Tens of thousands of Israelis are now displaced within Israel because of the numerous, if not daily, rocket attacks and artillery strikes from the north. And some form of Hezbollah-led incursion into Israel can't be ruled out. Whether Iran wishes to risk Hezbollah at this point and whether they want to risk the potential for a full-scale Israeli invasion of Lebanon in response is another matter. And I think the latter is something they would like to avoid.
I'll continue my conversation with Duncan Bullivant after this short break.
This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, creating a more friction-free office. Made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
Duncan, how has the United States reacted to what happened? What have they said?
The United States is, as ever, demanding restraint from Israel. But the language coming out of the United States at the moment, bearing in mind the United States tends to wake up after most of these things have happened, so response is often 24 hours late. But I think the United States is beside itself at the moment. It's they're locked to Israel because they need Israel. Israel needs the United States of America. But Israel is heading in a direction where it definitely needs help to avoid wider escalation.
We're always concerned about anything that would be escalatory or cause an increase in conflict in the region. It's been one of the goals of this administration since October 7th to keep the conflict from spreading, recognizing that Israel has the right to defend itself from adversaries that are sworn to its destruction.
The U.S. voices of concern coming out of Blinken and Biden are urging restraint. But what they're not doing is necessarily offering a blueprint for peace. The US, I think, sees a deal with Hamas and the release of all the remaining hostages as a major step forward. And I think that's their primary mission at the moment, is to get that deal done, get the hostages released, which takes political pressure off the Netanyahu regime, which may mean that the Netanyahu regime start behaving in a slightly less peculiar way than they are at the moment. But that remains to be seen and is probably wishful thinking. But I think the US position now is, and you'll see US language hardening now over the next few days and weeks, the US position is going to be pushing Israel hard further and further now to an immediate ceasefire and some sort of freezing of the cross-border military activity. I think the US will not want to see an escalation of the conflict over into Lebanon and will be doing everything in their power to see the Israelis do not put themselves in a situation where escalation into Lebanon is inevitable. So I expect to see harsh words from the United States. In terms of actions, let's wait and see. I think it all depends really on what the Iranian response is going to be over the next few days and weeks.
It's worth mentioning at this point that Israel has received more US military aid than any other country in the world since World War II. And the United States has continued to supply Israel with weapons since the start of this war. The Biden administration is now close to approving a major new weapons sale worth more than $18 billion. Could that change now with the escalation or potential escalation of this conflict to a regional level?
There's a possibility that it could be delayed. I think overall, the US position will be to support Israel come what may, through thick and thin. As I said, they're sort of locked in this near Faustian pact now, and that is the United States has to support Israel, even though Netanyahu seems to be leading them in a perhaps wrong direction. The impact on Israel of delays to military aid and military support invariably is political rather than material. Israel's stockpiles of military hardware are more than considerable. Israel's ability to generate its own high-tech military equipment from drones to artillery systems is quite extraordinary. So I think any potential US breaks on certain equipment and certain ammunition supplies being denied to Israel, I think we're a way off that. I think that you're looking at United States' relationship with Israel is such that anybody that starts coming up and suggesting that Israel should be put on a sanctions list or that these packages should be delayed because of their actions is running the risk of falling foul of not just the Israeli lobby, but of pretty wide public support for the Israeli effort in Gaza in the United States. But by the same token, there is a growing voice, especially amongst youngsters. There's an election coming up. I think you'll find that a large proportion of Democrats are vehemently opposed to Israel's actions in Gaza. And also you've got, within the younger voters, generally speaking, they are pro-Palestinian and again, opposed to the Israeli military action.
Duncan, this coming Sunday marks 6 months since the conflict in Gaza began last October. It's clear by now that Benjamin Netanyahu and his officials will just continue to ignore UN Security Council calls for a ceasefire and the International Court of Justice's order to prevent genocide. So how far will Israel go? And is there an end in sight to this conflict?
I don't see it happening at this stage of the game, but Israel needs to start signalling pretty soon, not just to the United States, but to the world, that it is ready to start talking and start entering into dialogue to end this conflict. Because this level of the optics that are being presented to the world, and I think if you look at it from that perspective, in the last 48 hours, you've seen aid workers killed, you've seen a hospital destroyed and is of no longer of any real use, and you've also seen a diplomatic mission, perhaps, destroyed by an Israeli strike. Those three things together paint a very dire picture, and it looks like a conflict that is swinging way out of control. But of course, everything's in context. And if you just spread those things out over a month, we probably wouldn't bat an eyelid, unfortunately. But I think there is definitely a drumbeat of real concern now in the West. And I think that this, the last 24 to 48 hours, will be a turning point in the way in which Israel's traditional supporters and allies regard Israel going forward and seek to provide them with guidance in terms of which direction they should be heading. And that may fall on deaf ears with elements of Netanyahu's cabinet. And it may well be that the only language they listen to is going to be economic. And that poses a huge number of problems in terms of getting the balance right between Israel and Hamas. But let's just see how things play out over the next few weeks.
Duncan Bullivant, thank you so much for your time today.
It's a pleasure.
That's all for today. For more reporting on the conflict in Gaza and the crisis unfolding across the Middle East, subscribe at irishtimes.com/subscribe. I'm Saoirse Pollock. Today's episode was produced by Suzanne Brennan and Aideen Finnegan. In the News, we'll be back tomorrow.